Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Welcome to today's show. Asking the question, is parenting queer? Now, you might be wondering what show we're talking about today, and that show is Queeries, the show in which we just don't do anything the way that it should, including introducing the show. My name is Lana, and we have the delightful Emma behind the panel.
Good afternoon, Lana.
Thank you to Patrick and Emily for today's Rainbow Crusaders with a story about Troy Davies and Echo Homo. So is parenting queer? Emma and I are both parents. We're both queer. But I wonder, does that make our parenting queer? A lot has been said and written about queer parenting in recent years, but most of this commentary ignores the opportunity to actually engage queer theory and instead simply equates queer parenting with LGBTIQ people raising children. We're going to start this show by looking at some of the different ways queer people may become parents. Then we're going to look at a piece that delinks mother and father from female and male. And finally, we have a piece that looks at what happens when I attempt to apply personally the insights of queer theory to my relationship with my daughter Tani, with an interview from her. So first off, I thought it'd be interesting to hear from people about how they got their children. For some people, a man and a woman have sex, a baby is conceived, and 9 months later a bouncing baby is born, and a mother and father live happily ever after with their little family unit. But it doesn't always happen that way. Here's a clip from episode 303 on queer parenting from Bent TV on how queers got their babies.
We did a surrogacy through the US for our first one, and we're doing a surrogacy through India for our second one. And so the second one is born or due in January. Mid-January.
Did you have to get an egg donor and a surrogate separately?
Yep, both situations. So with the egg donor, it's interesting because you get this, it's almost like a women's underwear catalogue. He's just flicking through these people and it's like, oh, that'll do.
Wow.
So I got banned from picking her. Jason took over from that point
because you were just going whatever.
Yeah, whatever. That she looks
so
pretty.
So Jason
enough.
Had higher standards, is what you're saying?
He had more patience to go through.
Okay. Was there a specific thing that you were looking for in your designer baby? Like, you know, was it like she needs to be intelligent, or she needs to be sporty, or she needs to be gorgeous, or?
No, not really. Picking the egg donor, I was looking for things like what's the educational levels and things like this, but then you pay more for those
really?
Ones. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
The high quality egg donors.
If they've got a doctorate degree, you pay more than if they've got a master's degree, which is more than a bachelor's degree, which is more than a high school.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But beyond that, it was mostly actually the health of the woman, genetics and things like this, nothing too major.
Different to just having a baby with someone, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, like I did. But yes, we won't talk about that just yet. Jen, let's talk about you.
So I was in a same-sex relationship at the time and conceived using the proverbial turkey baster. It's not actually a turkey baster. We use a syringe and a cup.
Yeah.
Which I can't imagine how a turkey baster would actually work.
That's why you don't use a turkey baster.
Was there really long syringe? Was it like a
It was just. It was. I think it's a 10 mil.
So you had to do like a really forceful squirt. Is that what happens?
No, you want to do a gentle squirt because you don't want to damage the sperm. So I did a bit of Google research before we did it.
Yeah. And so worked first time, did it?
No. It it took about 4 goes.
Okay.
All up.
So, how did you get your donor?
I advertised. It was actually quite funny. I was studying at the time and I was procrastinating one day and Googling around and I came across, it's not there anymore, but the, what's it called? I think the Pink Pages or something had a parenting section, and it's a pity it's not there because it was really good if anyone who's attached to that is watching. And my partner at the time was Filipino, so I just put an ad on saying, any Filipino guys out there interested in being a donor. And thinking, you know, what are my chances? I got a response within 2 hours.
Wow.
And he was fantastic. And he was just, it was just perfect. We had really similar ideas about, you know, his role and our roles and the relationship that he would have with the kid. And he was really easygoing. He was probably a high quality, had a couple of postgraduate degrees.
All right, expensive.
Yet I didn't pay him. You know, so I feel like it was a bit meant to be and really lucky with him. He was in a different state, so I had to fly there for the sperm handover.
Mm.
So does he, I mean, do your kids see him? Or
Yep. So we see him probably not as often as maybe I'd like. And I think as my son gets older, it'll have to be more often because he's, you know, he'll start to facilitate that, I guess, as he gets a bit older. But at the moment, I guess every 1 or 2 months he visits. Or
that's cool.
That's quite frequent.
Yeah. And they Skype. So my son, who's 3 now,
is
good on Skype. You know, kids these days.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay. So Remy, your story.
I guess I'm the flip side of Jen in that I am a donor, and I didn't actually answer an ad. I actually have friends who are a couple, and they sort of approached me and said, would you want to donate? So we actually talked about it for about 2 years because I didn't want to go into that lightly. And so we kind of worked it out that we were all eventually on the same page, and we had sort of some rules and guidelines sort of down. And of course, they're all out the window now. Mm. And then we went ahead, and so we did the first one, and there was always going to be, I wanted to call the second baby sequel. Did not go down well. So there was always option on the second one. And then, because originally it was going to be each mother or each woman was going to be the carrier.
Yes, sure.
For one, so that we'd have a sort of a tighter biological circle. Things didn't work out that way, but that was the original plan.
Yeah.
You got it. Well, hang on, what was yours? What's your story?
Quickly, I thought I was straight and I had a baby with a man, and then I discovered I was bi. So, you know, that's sort of, I did it the old fashioned way. You know?
Yeah. By accident.
Having sex thing. Actually, we planned ours.
At the back seat of the car?
No, we actually planned ours, and actually it said, okay, so I want to have mine by this stage or before 30. You're going to have it? You're going to do it? So I had two. I had two with the same man.
That was a clip from Bent TV's episode 303 on queer parenting. And we got to hear from many queer people that many queer people become parents in very non-traditional kinds of ways. But some of us do have our babies in very traditional kinds of ways, and Emma and I both fit into that category. So next up, I thought it'd be interesting to hear about ways in which people intentionally parent in ways that are queer. I came across this blog post Jane Ward wrote called Queer Parenting for Heteros and Anyone Else Who Wants to Teach Children That Being Queer is Awesome. I thought it was an interesting piece, and I asked Joyster Ellis to record it for the show. This is a particularly interesting part called Delinking Mother and Father from Female and Male that I want to share with you.
My partner Kat is a woman who is our child's dad. Kat disidentifies with most of the gendered meaning assigned to motherhood, especially notions that equate motherhood with fertility, goddess energy, biological instincts, or the quintessential feminine. I am our child's mother, and although I'm also very critical of these notions, they're more incompatible with my political and theoretical orientation than with my gender presentation, which is, for better or worse, quite normative. The fact that Kat is our child's dad is very challenging for most people, including and sometimes especially gay and lesbian people, who would like Kat to think of herself not as a dad, but as a butch lesbian pushing the boundaries of motherhood. But why should the cross-gendering of parenting roles be so challenging or offensive to people? The feminist movement has succeeded in disrupting the essential gendering of all other forms of work. Most people now acknowledge, for instance, that there are women who are doctors and nurses who are men. But parenting roles remain deeply gendered and essentialist, such that female parents are always mothers and male parents are always fathers. I understand mother and father as two distinct sets of job duties, stylistic approaches, or performative categories that should be available to all people regardless of sex or gender, akin to the way we now understand work and occupations. cross-gendering the adult-child relationship, such as a child being raised by a female dad, demonstrates to children the social constructedness of gender in very practical terms, introducing them to a broader range of relational options for both female and male-bodied people. It sets the stage for them to later choose for themselves from the conventions associated with mothering, fathering, or both. Instead of flattening gender differences, queerness recodes traditional genders and celebrates their queer forms, such as transforming masculinity and femininity into butch and femme. Similarly, a queer approach to parenting recognizes differences that have long been associated with biological sex and detaches them from male and female bodies. Some parents like to handle the sit-down emotional stuff. Others prefer engaging kids in a series of physical activities. Some want to parent full-time. Others find part-time parenting more enjoyable. So, while our ultimate goal may be to imagine parenting models that transcend the mother-father binary altogether, until we have achieved this total gender revolution, a queer approach recognizes that parenting, like all of our relationships, is gendered, and that we need not throw gender out of the picture in order to create just and fulfilling relationships with children. Instead, we need to be clear about what specifically we imagine are the unique contributions that femininity and masculinity bring to parenting, and then make those parenting styles available to all people, regardless of biological sex.
That was Joyster Ellis reading an excerpt from Queer Parenting for Heteros blog post written by Jane Ward about delinking mother and father from female and male that I wanted to share with you. We are talking parenting today. Is parenting queer? We've spoken to, or we've had, we've listened to a Bent TV an excerpt from a Bent TV episode 303 on queer parenting that was talking about how they got their children, and it was in ways that are somewhat traditional and ways in which aren't somewhat traditional. And I learnt the turkey baster isn't actually a turkey baster, but a 10 mil syringe. We also got to hear about ways in which people particularly queer their parenting by delinking mother and father from female and male. And in this final piece that we look at today, we looked at what happened when I personally attempt to apply the insights of queer theory and incorporate it in a parenting style on my daughter, Tani. I interviewed her this morning, and just to note, she usually calls me Lana. That's not something that she's doing particularly for the show because, yes, we do things a little differently. She does sometimes call me Mum when she's sick or hurt or she really wants something. And so this is what my feisty daughter, Tani, has to say on queer parenting.
I'm 21, queer. My mother is queer. Most of my friends are queer. So I'd say that Lana's parenting is queer in the sense that it doesn't subscribe to a traditional, specifically nuclear family model of how someone is meant to parent or what the typical stereotypes are for parenting. Specifically in the sense that, you know, when you think about a quote-unquote normal family, what you have is the stereotypical father figure and the stereotypical, like, incredibly maternal kind of hovering mother figure, and the idea that the parents are meant to not necessarily dictate but have strong opinions on, you know, the actions and the ideologies and the behaviours of their children. And for me and Lana, that doesn't really at all describe our relationship. It's much more a relationship of open communication and mutual respect, and there's none of that idea of having to not necessarily be deceitful, but the idea of having to censor what you say and what you do in front of one another to transcribe to what kind of relationship you're meant to have and what parts of one another's life you're meant to be involved in. And it's rather we're involved in one another's lives in the things that we mutually care about, but there's no real need to, you know, pretend that certain parts of each other's lives don't exist.
Do you think this intersects with my sexuality?
No, it doesn't. However, I'd say that being a queer person, you come to have a greater understanding of the way in which intersectional politics impact on your behaviours and on your ideologies. And although I wouldn't say that Lana being queer necessarily dictates queer parenting, I would say that being queer made it a lot easier to have a non-normative view of what a parental-child relationship looks like. I'd say that Lana's parenting and queerness has impacted my queerness only insofar as, you know, my ideologies and beliefs are impacted by those around me and by opinions that I respect. And because mine and Lana's relationship is so communicative and we're both so kind of open about why we do the things that we do, my understanding of the way in which I act has been influenced by that. But only because it's something that I'm aware of and something that we talk about, but isn't necessarily that innate transfer of behavior or ideology that could be implied by a parental-child relationship. I think that, especially in the global West and in the idea of the nuclear family, parenting isn't necessarily queer. I think there's a normative way to go about parenting in the same way there's a normative way to go about having a relationship. I would say that Lana's parenting is queer because I don't think that it does subscribe to that normative idea of parental-child relationship in the nuclear family. I think that it's possible to have a non-queer parental method because I think that the nuclear family implies a certain level of heteronormativity within the family and a certain kind of relationship that's heavily dependent on that idea of the male parental figure and the female parental figure and the figures of authority and reason within a child's life. I think that queer parenting, specifically Lana's style of queer parenting, disregards that preconceived notion of a parental-child relationship and instead builds upon the idea of what kind of support networks does my child need? How can I do that? And how can I do that in a way that allows us both to respect one another before anything else? You know, it's grounded in the idea of having a strong and healthy relationship as opposed to being grounded in the idea of what parents necessarily think their child needs from them. And I think that that's a really important definition to make because I think that if you speak to a lot of parents about their parenting methods, very often it's about my child needs this or I think this about my child or I think that it is my job too. And I think that disregards the fact that in queer parenting, as far as I'm concerned, it's not about what you think you should do, but it's about having the strength of communication and of relationship to say, what do you need from me and what do I need from you and how can we reach that? And I think that method of queer parenting is so much better than this, you know, stereotypical, I'm going to call it nuclear family parenting, because it allows the relationship to grow and develop in a way that isn't dependent on where you think your child is at. The way parenting has impacted me is that it's helped define the way I view healthy relationships. I think that having a parent who I can communicate with in the way that I do and where it is dependent on not what you think a relationship should be, but on what you need from a relationship and what's healthy in a relationship and how both individuals as individuals are doing in a relationship has helped me develop a method of creating relationships and friendships with other people that's also central to that idea of communication and of respect. I think that queer parenting has changed my, well, not necessarily changed, but influenced my broader view of life, in the sense that if queer parenting can be seen in an ideal sense as intersectional, the way in which having that level of intersexuality and individuality in that kind of formative relationship has made it a lot easier for me to begin to recognize the number of preconceived notions about how one should go about their lives and think about them critically, so that I can, you know, dress however I want and be completely comfortable in doing so without having to second guess it and understanding why I'm comfortable doing so, or be happy to not pursue a tertiary education and not be caught up in the idea of, you know, what someone should be doing or what a successful life is. And I think that having a queer parent, or that kind of queer relationship, so to speak, makes it a lot easier when it's such a fundamental relationship in society to begin to recognize other fundamental ways of going about your life that most people are taught to do in a very specific way and in a very quote-unquote normalized way, and then respond to it accordingly and critically.
I have to say, I'm a little bit of a proud mama.
Looking at two.
That was my daughter Tani talking about her understanding of queer parenting and what it looks like for her and how I queer parent. So it was quite interesting, because for her, she's saying that I'm a queer parent, not because I'm queer, but the way I parent is non-normative.
Mm, that's interesting, isn't it? But it's right for you and her.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Works.
Yes. She's a bit like me, isn't she?
The bit that didn't make the edit was very funny.
You're listening to Queeries. My name is Lana. And today we are asking the question, is parenting queer? We looked at some of the different ways queer people may become parents. We heard about the turkey baster. We heard about the 10 mil syringe that's not really a turkey baster. We heard about the catalogue, which some fellow said was like a woman's underwear catalogue. And, you know, the kind of more traditional ways in which people become parents. We looked at a piece that de-links mother and father from female and male. And finally, we heard from my daughter, Tani, as she explains what happens when I attempt to apply the insights of queer theory to my relationship with her. I want to give a big thanks to Alice for doing the voice of the Queer Parenting for Heteros and Anyone Else Who Wants to Teach Kids at Being Queer is Awesome blog by Jane Ward.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.